Good morning.
Hello.
Good morning, Boobo. Is Dan there with you? Oh, there's Dan hiding behind Boobo. this is April 19th, 2021. This is episode 193 of Transmission.
Okay, yeah. Who's planning the party for episode 200?
Yeah, somebody's got to be
party planner.
The parties are, or the chair of the party subcommittee on festivities.
Yeah, but in lieu of a party, we would take donations. So mm-hmm. We haven't commented on that recently, like for 60 or 70 episodes. So yeah, we do take helps, donations. Yeah. Every little bit helps. We've gotten some few donations. It's great. We got a comment recently from somebody that said we need a bigger budget. So, if you want us to have a bigger budget, you got to send us money.
Yeah, it's interesting when people will. I mean, there's a compliment and a criticism in there. And like, if you want this polished up, top of the line production qualities, let's just be clear. Like, this isn't some sort of money scheme for Dan and I. Like, we're not. Our net profits are not booming because of doing this transmission. So every little bit does help, even just to cover like the fees for using this platform and stuff. So anything helps. So we should introduce ourselves, I guess. I'm Mark Van Steenwyck. I direct the Center for Prophetic Imagination.
And I'm Daniel Wolpert. I direct MICA, the Minnesota Institute of Contemplation and Healing. Oh yeah, Tyler. This is the latest. How do you?
I've never heard of this. Is it?
Yeah, this is the newest virtual coin.
Doja coin.
Doggy
coin.
And apparently, what I just read about this yesterday because Coinbase, which is one of the big virtual currency exchange companies, just went public last week, and. Yeah, so it's like a public company based on speculative currency. It's very fascinating. It's like double layers of betting. But anyway, apparently
all currency is a little speculative, unfortunately.
But
yay.
But apparently this virtual currency was actually invented as a joke. It was like supposed to be a spoof on virtual currencies.
Okay.
But now it's become a thing. And apparently once Coinbase went public, it went crazy and is now super valuable, whatever that exactly means.
The world didn't make sense to me before all this, and now it makes less sense to me. maybe we should just, there's already comments coming in on the topic and we haven't even started talking about it. So maybe we should, should I pull up this picture just to set a frame?
Please do. So obviously, there's a lot going on in the Twin Cities and we've had another week of protests following another police shooting of an unarmed black man, Dante Wright. We've got closing arguments in the Chauvin trial today. It will likely go to the jury tomorrow, which means we theoretically could have a verdict tomorrow. And so it just felt like this week we had to kind of focus on all this stuff. It's hard to think about anything else. And so we've got this operation safety net going on in the Twin Cities, which basically is a $30 million martial law operation. We've got, soldiers all over the place, cops all over the place, these massive SWAT vehicles all over the place, all to keep us safe. So we thought we'd explore that. And to kick off, I want to just give you a couple images. So this is an apartment building in Brooklyn Center. This is directly across the street from the police station. So Brooklyn Center is a very working class, lower class, immigrant community. And this apartment building is certainly nothing fancy. These are probably pretty small apartments, probably have a lot of people living in them. So that's Brooklyn Center. Mm-hmm. Now let's see a picture of the home where Kim Porter, who is the cop who shot Dante Wright, lives.
Okay, here we go. Boom.
So that's where she gets to live. And this picture was taken just the other day. So not only does she get to live there, but her house is now being protected. This is in Champlin, Minnesota, which is a further out suburb.
Of course, because I would imagine most Brooklyn Center cops don't live in Brooklyn Center, just like most Minneapolis cops don't live in Minneapolis.
There is not a single police officer on the Brooklyn Center Police Department that lives in Brooklyn Center. Not one.
And it's not like Brooklyn Center is even some sort of like vast impoverished hellscape or anything. Like, no, you know what I mean? It's not like there aren't bougie houses in Brooklyn Center too. Just like in, it's just always interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, you know, what we want to talk about this week really is just this whole question of this wider question of safety. What is it that human beings want and need in terms of safety, and what keeps us safe, right? So, you know, does military hardware keep us safe? Right? Does, you know, snipers on the roof of a police station keep us safe? If you have $30 million lying around, which apparently we do, and you are going to choose to spend that on safety, what keeps us safe?
Right? I mean, this is the debate that around, you know, defunding is all tied up in, because people really, really believe that if there weren't cops protecting them, it'd be like Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome kind of situation.
Right.
Some comments coming in we can dive into. And Robert writes, drug test all cops now and regularly in jail. Yeah, I feel like
they may very well be drug tested already. It wouldn't surprise me. But
no, I mean, this raises the question of, you know, even if your goal is reforming the police in vaguely the same framework it exists in now, there's clearly not enough accountability. And even the modest sort of like fairly impotent ways of holding them accountable haven't really gotten much traction.
Right.
It's kind of astonishing.
And one of the things that a friend of mine pointed out the other day was how, you know, for a while there was this whole thing about, well, let's get body cameras, right? And body cameras are going to be a game changer, and they're going to hold police accountable, and it's going to make people behave differently. Well, so now we've got all these videos, and, you know, the stuff is still happening, right? So a device, a technology like body cameras in and of themselves are not going to change behavior unless there's some response to the body camera footage.
Well, even so, like, and people have been pointing this out for a long time now. You know, you have Derek Chauvin he's being filmed. And so it's very clear, but like, it's amazing how much ideology can just shape how you understand what happened. Even if he was narrating, I'm putting my knee on him now for, you know, X number of minutes, like, that still wouldn't stop the fact that people are going to come out and say, well, it's a cop, it's totally justifiable. Same thing that happened with Dante Wright. You could have Derek Chauvin's personal journal. I think I may have killed a man today, and it still wouldn't, right. It wouldn't change the perception of things. CK writes, I've been watching Exterminate All the Brutes by Raoul Peck, and it's powerful and deeply disturbing. That being said, watching it brings into light just how the police are agents of genocide.
Yeah, so that's an outstanding miniseries. It's on HBO. Highly, highly recommend that for everybody. In fact, you know, I really feel like that should be required viewing for mm-hmm. everybody in high school in America, as well as lots of adults to catch that up on. Mm-hmm. really a history of colonialism and colonization and racism. Really great series.
Medina's responding to Robert's comment earlier. What is fascinating is all the calls to drug test the poor, but people rarely say drug test the professionals. You know, those who could cause serious injury or death, like doctors, nurses, pilots, police officers, EMT. I'm more interested in these folks functioning with a clear head.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and of course, the drug test the poor thing is just another way of trying to punish poor people and not give people what they need.
Carol's watching closing arguments right now. If anything comes up, feel free to comment, because I'm not planning on watching it. But Stefan writes, cops are not good here in Eastern Europe, but nothing similar to USA. The gun violence there, both civilian and police, is a unique thing for developed countries. It's right. Because of our freedoms.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, and that might be a good thing to do a whole week on. The whole situation that is going on with gun violence in this country and the obvious complete nonsensical crap that all the arguments against sensible gun regulation is, it's just obscene, you know, It's just obscene.
Yeah. Carol writes, police protect and serve property rights. You know, when you say this stuff to people, they act like you're being conspiratorial and inane, as though as though that's not exactly true. Like, yes, they hopefully cops do more than that, but that's really kind of the bread and butter bottom line. To protect and to serve does not mean that they're going around looking for people to help. I mean, that's not what's happening. And it's almost always property rights first, or someone getting a call. And then everyone knows they prioritize certain places that they'd go to. Mm-hmm. I mean, none of this should be that controversial.
Yeah. Well, and including, and this is the, you know, the flip side of this, right, is that when police are involved with somebody in a high property value area, right, they treat them. They treat them completely differently, right? Completely differently. And the attitude there is, you know, we are there to protect you. And, you know, we want to make sure that you're okay and not doing anything too terribly crazy. But if you want to do whatever you want to do, if you want to use drugs, if you want to, you know, do whatever weird thing you're up to, like, that's fine. Right. That's absolutely fine. Mm-hmm. You know, and on the other hand, right, the people in the poor areas, right, who have almost no property, right, and who in fact are then, you know, forced to rent from governments or, you know, wealthy people, you know, slumlords, whatever, Those people are continually terrorized for the police. By the police for doing exactly the same thing or even less than the people in the wealthy parts of town are doing.
I remember the time I was in jail for, it was a protesting thing. And so I was in a holding cell, 25 mm-hmm. people crammed into this really space that's smaller than my office here. And everyone was there for mostly like having a dime bag or, one guy fell asleep on a bus and woke up in the bus mm-hmm. depot. But there was a guy from the suburbs who was caught for having a DUI. And he was loudly complaining the whole time. Right? Just complaining like he didn't deserve to be there. And everyone's like, what the fuck? You're the only one who really should be here, you piece of shit. Like, and but the cop, there was a cop who would come in. He was chewing tobacco and spitting into a cup, which I'm pretty sure is against rules. And he was really nice to this DUI guy the whole time. Right. Everyone else he was shitty to. And so it's just, even in that sort of an environment where the guy is clearly, he was the only one really potentially causing harm to other people. Right. He was treated nicer. Gus writes, Robert Douglas Delgado, rest in peace. Portland cop shot a man living in a park Friday and left him lying there for 4 hours before shooting tear gas at the crowd and leaving. I got struck by ricochet.
Yeah, I was seeing that, Gus, you were posting about that. It just, you know, and yeah, it's so horrible. And yeah, it's just horrible.
Yeah. Paul writes, I think about police as the domestic arm of our colonial military empire. It exists to protect the resources and wealth extracted from land and people, nothing more. If you do not agree to consent to this arrangement and do not comply completely with the situation, you will never be, quote unquote, safe.
Yeah, and so, you know, what the other kind of interesting dynamic that this gets, that sets, this sets up and sets in motion, right, is that, so if one is a property owner and then owns more and more and more, right? Mm-hmm. And you're in a capitalist society where clearly, you know, if you lose what you have, nobody's going to do anything or take care of you. Or in fact, if you're then living in a park, so the police may shoot you dead. Mm-hmm. And so you know that if you fall off the cliff of the haves, you become this terrible have not. And so then, yeah, you set up this this boundary keeping organization to protect you and what you have. And what is then paradoxical about that is that you actually start to feel less and less safe, right? Because there's then this constant fear of, well, I may lose what I have, right? And what if somebody robs me, right? And what if, you know, somebody comes and steals my identity and drains my bank account, you know, which is sort of now the latest thing that people are afraid of. And so this is one of the things where I think we need to look very deeply at what keeps us safe, because accumulating property when others do not have their basic needs, that is not a formula for keeping anybody safe, right? The people who don't have what they need aren't safe. Mm-hmm. The people that have too much, but then are terrified of losing that, they don't feel safe either. Right. And so, and yet again, if this is the brainwash idea that, well, I will feel safe if I have these things, then we're not really examining what is our level of sense of safety? Do we have that? And what might actually get us that?
Yeah, and people point this out all the time, and it should be common sense at this point, but it has to be oft repeated that, you know, when you start talking about reforming or even abolishing, which is where I want to see it go, people will bring out the litany of horrible things, rape, murder, all the things. And like, if we don't have the police, those things will happen all the time. As though the police prevent that stuff from happening. This is the thing that people like somehow don't get. It's not like the police are looking around to prevent stuff like that. They respond after the fact almost all the time. And so there's this assumption then that by the police acting violent towards wrongdoers, it keeps other wrongdoers in fear so that they're not going to do this stuff, which again, Stefan pointed this out. The fact that we have a hyper-militarized system doesn't seem to prevent shit.
Right, right. It's not preventing anything.
So you have, you know, we need to take a step back and say, wait, maybe this is all security theater that then is used as an arm of control to control something else other than what they say out loud. And you start talking about that, then you realize like, oh, okay, maybe this reform, defund, or abolish kind of rhetoric makes some sort of sense. And I don't know, it's so frustrating that we can't even get to that point of people recognizing what it is the police actually do.
Well, and that's where I feel like we have to start with this question of what is safety in human society? I mean, that's what, right. What really, you know, what makes me feel safe, right, is having my basic needs met, having positive relations with people around me, having a sense of meaningful interaction in society, and also knowing that other people feel the same way, right? And I mean, that's my sense of what creates safety. And none of that has anything to do with a tank rolling down my street. You know, we've had, living two blocks from George Fourth Square, we've had tanks rolling down our street a number of times over the last year, literally, not metaphorically. It did not make me feel safe, right? It did not make me feel safe when I stepped out onto my porch and a guy with an automatic weapon screamed at me to get inside. Like, that did not make me feel safe.
It's National Guard posted on the corner with their guns out, like,
right.
I want to know who feels better. What, like, I can tell you who tends to feel best about that sort of situation. Mm-hmm. And it's the white person who doesn't like, who's afraid of not white neighbors. Like, that's kind of,
right.
I mean, I was going to put it out there. Like, I was just saying to Dan earlier,
the
like
next door crew,
I go fishing on next door and someone was upset because a would be city council person was saying, look, if you're going to loot and stuff, you should go to Lake of the Isles. And what they're saying is like, look, if protests turn into various kinds of property destruction and looting, which can happen, aim it at the rich neighborhoods. That's basically what she said. And people are losing their gall-darn minds. And so I, you know, of course, posted like, oh, I wish I lived in that person's ward so I could vote for them, just because I wanted to upset more more people, I guess.
Mark loves being a next door troll.
I'm the Loki of next door. Paul writes, I think about police as the domestic arm.
We read that one.
This sounded familiar. Yeah. CK writes, has anyone seen the Lake and Nicollet police station? It looks like something out of the brutalist movement.
No, I haven't seen that.
Not lately, but I can imagine. Yeah. I remember how they all looked right after just last summer. Stefan writes, drug testing the poor is unbiblical. Give strong drink to him who is perishing and wine to him whose life is bitter. Let him drink and forget his poverty and remember his trouble no more. I like that passage. And, you know, I just think drug testing in general is, I mean,
yeah, I don't think pilots
and stuff, maybe that makes some sort of sense, but people should be judged based upon for if they're doing their job or not. And then no one should have to worry about going destitute because they don't do their job.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think any drugs should be illegal anyway, so it's a whole other conversation.
Yeah, that's a big one. Terry writes, Falcon Heights isn't a poor neighborhood.
I wonder if that's a reference to the Philando Castile shooting.
Yeah, like these places, it's not, you know, for sure. Falcon Heights has, it's kind of your typical suburb. It's not, it's got a mix of everything. There's nothing particularly like sketchy, quote unquote, about it. Carol writes, watching States hired Silk Stocking's lawyer, I want Clarence Darrow.
Okay.
Yeah. It would be more interesting to watch Clarence Darrow, that's for sure. CK writes, safety for me is being able to resist injustice without reprisals.
Right. Yeah, I mean, there's, you know, and there's been a lot this weekend about the way in which people were attacked, the ways in which the press was attacked. Well, and you want to see a police station that looks like something out of the brutalist movement, go and check out the Brooklyn Center police station right now. It is ridiculous. It's ridiculous. You know, I mean, there's probably like $5 million worth of hardware just parked outside. I was thinking about that. And again, this is where the safety and symbolism and what are police really for? Look, burning buildings suck. My barn burned down at my farm. It's horrible. I don't recommend burning buildings to anybody. And at the end of the day, a building or a police station or whatever burns down, if nobody's hurt in that, like, you know, is that really the worst thing that can happen in the world? But it's clearly, I mean, after the third precinct burn, I mean, it was very obvious when you go to that Brooklyn Center Police Department, the message is, we will not allow the state to be overrun like that again. Right? We absolutely have to have the amount of authority and control to protect this particular property, which, of course, by the way, what everybody forgets is, you know, all those people outside the police station, like, they paid for that property, right? I mean, who paid for that property, right? We all did. You know, but now it becomes like this thing, you know, is of utmost importance and symbolizes the fact that the state has control over people. And that's going to be protected at all cost, like literally at all cost.
Mm-hmm. Yep. This is all a big flex for the governor and the mayor.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really not about helping people feel safe, even really a little, unless you're someone who...
Well, unless you're of the property class that, you know, feels very uncomfortable. And I probably haven't mentioned this in a long time. I think I, you know, may have mentioned this early on, but, you know, when we first moved here to South Minneapolis, I can't tell you the number of white people I know out in the suburbs that are scared to come to my neighborhood. And this was before George Floyd was killed.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Right. Yeah. And so there, you know, as you said, it's like, who feels safe? Well, it's white people that are afraid of being around people of color. And, you know, and they're the ones that the system is working for.
Yeah. And it's also this question of, what is it about some people that they find increasing levels of authoritarianism safer, and other people who feel like safer when there's less and less centralized authority over their lives? And that should tell you, like, the people who tend to feel safe with centralized power, powerful authority, they're more proximal to that. So, you know, this is kind of, the police exist for people who have stuff.
Yeah.
Dumb. You know, like, you know, we're regurgitating this statement over and over again, and people say it all the time. It's because people, for some reason, get tricked into thinking that it's not true. Julia points out, I thought I was the only next door troll. We should start
Julia, it does not surprise me that you're a next door troll. But yes, Mark loves doing that.
Yeah. So sometimes I don't do it as much as I should. Group. It takes a little discipline to really troll well, and I'm trying to up my game. Catherine writes, okay, so I know so much of this is about protecting certain interests of money and power, but even trying to see things that way, the economics don't make sense to me. Who does it benefit to murder someone and provoke months of unrest for a $20 counterfeit bill or $75 expired tabs? Isn't all that tear gas expensive? What is the financial incentive of fascist repression? Now, here you go being really thoughtful and reasonable again, Catherine. You know, that's the thing. These sorts of things, they don't really – it's like the whole question of homelessness. Like, we all know, we've seen the studies that providing housing for everyone would be cheaper. So then the question is, like, whose interests are ultimately served by this sort of the performance of it all?
Yeah, it costs more to keep somebody in a state prison for a year than it would cost to send them to Harvard for a year. So, right. So, no. Your answer is no. None of this makes economic sense.
Yeah.
But certainly on the small scale, but what it serves, right, is it serves to create this incredible economic gradient that we have.
Mm-hmm. And to reinforce certain kinds of power.
Yeah. Yeah. And so that, if you're not giving people a safe life and what they would need and want, right? And we've heard this certainly in terms of, like, some of the complaints of, like, well, this is why we don't want to give unemployment benefits, because then those people won't want to go to work, right? And of course, what you're really saying is they won't want to go to work at their minimum wage shitty jobs, which don't pay them a living wage and which they hate doing.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, so what all of this oppression does is to prop up the rest of this huge economic system that is profiting a very small number of people.
America. Seymour's commenting.
Yay, Adam's back. Yeah, I haven't seen around these parts in a long time.
Punishment is so ingrained. What does equal treatment mean to us? Mistreatment and imprisonment for all? The drunk driver doesn't need to be treated poorly. Everyone should be treated with compassion.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing. Like, the fact that this police officer, and I doubt this was an anomaly, enjoyed being punitive to people kind of tells me a lot. Mm-hmm. Like, this isn't just about, this isn't about protection. It's about punishing and shaming and trying to help people remember that they need to stay in their place. I mean, there's a lot of that with the cops, totally. And so I'm white, so I'm treated by cops pretty nicely wherever, but I notice that I'm treated better if I'm stopped by a cop in nice neighborhoods because they assume I'm one of those kinds of white people. But if it's in another part of an area, then I'm not treated as nice. And you can tell, like, who they think they're ultimately serving. Terry writes, I think people are afraid of people who are not of the same race. Police need to live in the community they serve. Education starting at age 3 in multiracial classrooms, et cetera. Mm-hmm. Wow, there's lots of comments. We're going to blaze through these all. Yeah. I didn't realize how much they continued on. So Seymour writes,
they've just picked up like crazy now.
We're just going to blaze through as many as we can. We're sorry we can't get to everything with depth. And clearly compassion can look very different in different circumstances. It's not all acceptance of everyone, no matter what. It's boundary setting. It's accountability. It's work.
Yeah, and it's what's actually helpful. I mean, I've probably mentioned this on the show before at some point. For a long time, I did a meditation class in the county jail up in Northwest Minnesota, and I never met a single person that I thought needed to be in jail in that environment of all the people that I met in there. Mm-hmm. And it just was all a huge moneymaker, you know, for the county and for social control.
Yep. The intimidation and social control is worth it to someone, I guess. That's from Paul.
Yeah.
Gus writes, the feds subsidize a ton of the police expenses if they are quote unquote tough on crime and drugs in particular. It doesn't have to make sense economically on a local level. That's from Gus. Mm-hmm. Paul writes, another thing I've started thinking about is that capitalism naturally produces gangs, and the police force is essentially a very large and well-armed example. Yeah, they're a gang. People naturally band together in these quote unquote gangs like the mafia or motorcycle clubs or labor unions or credit unions or the police, basically all for the same reason, to protect the group from the exploitative effects of capitalism. And the gangs all get used in different ways by the various industrial titans. The police are pawns, like, and it trails off. Again, comments over certain sizes get clipped. Yeah.
Well, and this is something that we should explore during the rest of the week. I mean, what you're pointing out, and this isn't just capitalism. I mean, people, right. So people cluster in groups for safety. And, you know, one of the things that we are continually up against is the fact that to expand beyond our group and our sense of safety beyond our group, is very, very challenging. So that we'll get more into that as the week goes on.
Midway Police Station in St. Paul has fences with barbed wire and cement barriers. CK writes, it's clear to me that Operation Safety Net, which is kind of the overarching term for this military invasion of the Twin Cities, Operation Safety Net is all about white wealth and white fear. Catherine Wright writes, it's relatively easy to trace who profits from the horror that is U.S. prisons and detention centers and how. But some of these police murders feel so grimly deliberate. In the middle of the Chauvin trial, are you effing kidding me? And I don't understand what their strategy is. Is it to spread terror and to gain notoriety? To sow chaos?
Yeah, or is it just habit, right? I mean, that's the other thing. Is it just, it's so habitual that they can't stop, even when it obviously would be beneficial.
Gus writes, Michelle Alexander's book, The New Jim Crow, spends a lot of time on how the economics of police militarization and expansion. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Seymour writes, it's wild how breaking windows at Target is outside of the Overton window, but brutalizing protesters and journalists is dead center of what's acceptable. When they say, quote unquote, this will not stand, what are they talking about? They act like that isn't the whole point in the other side, that we will not accept a more serious police force. Murderous.
Yeah.
Virgil writes, I'd love to see a kind of housing program that buys all the empty real estate in middle America and gives it to people who promise to live in it for X amount of time. Some of our housing here is insanely cheap compared to the coasts in large northern cities. It would be cheaper. Terry writes, philosophy of Trumpism perpetuates the stupidity of pulling oneself by one's own bootstraps. No one pulls themselves up, especially the wealthy. Seymour writes, the thing is that even folks who are demanding justice and talk about abolition, people are still demanding violent mistreatment as part of their view of what equality looks like. That's true. That's a whole other conversation that needs to be had. Like how, we could say a lot about that and hopefully we will.
Yeah.
Amir writes, when will white people move away from fear towards love for the rest of their human, plant, and animal relatives? What a sad way to inhabit a wonderful world. What a dead theology.
Amen.
Yeah. And David writes, the name safety net says a lot. Net for selective, who's the net for?
There we go. Mic drop. All right. Love those last two comments. Love all the comments. Seymour, great to have you back with us. Good to see everybody on this Monday morning. We'll be back on Wednesday.
See you on Wednesday, everybody. Peace.
All right. Bye.